Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Pezzo this weekend along with Tom Brown. Thank you for joining us. Of course, we want phone calls always, 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or shoot me an email, jstone@pezzofinancial.net. Wow, what a week. What a month.
Yeah.
I think we're saying that a lot.
What a year.
What a year. I know, 2020 has been an interesting year for sure.
Yeah, obviously it's something that is filled with things that have never happened before, and it just keeps on coming.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, today's been an interesting day already because I'm driving around going, I keep forgetting it's Halloween. And everybody's dressed different. And you're thinking, why are they? Oh, it's Halloween. That's why they're wearing a different type of mask.
Yeah, but it's interesting that it's 8 in the morning and they're dressed like that.
Yes, absolutely. It looks like there was a very fun event at one of my favorite places last night at the Children's Museum, and Tom got to dress up like an angry bird.
Yes.
And there is proof on their website. You can go see pictures on their Facebook. So if you want to see Tom as an angry bird, it's out there.
I didn't realize that. Well,
but that'll be the entertainment for the day.
Yes, yeah. I'm sure.
But what an important election. I've been interested in politics probably my entire life. My dad was very involved politically, so he always took us to rallies, and we helped drop lit and do all sorts of things as kids. We were involved in parades and everything, just supporting different political parties. And it's just so strange this time because I don't, in my lifetime at least, never have felt that an election could be as important as this one and also as divisive among people. I heard on Kevin's show Friday in the morning where a lady actually called in and said that her daughter had cut ties with her because they didn't think the same politically. I don't think I've ever heard of that before.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it happens and it's happened in the past, but it just seems more prevalent nowadays because I think more of the social media just is getting these words out, this message out there, and getting people more angry.
Yeah, and they can always retweet.
Then it would just be this person and two friends are mad. Now they can have thousands of people listening to them. And I think that if a charismatic kind of person is out there putting out some message of anger, it's easy to do that if you're not don't have any critical thought.
Or even a difference of opinion. When you look at any sort of like Facebook with your friends, you'll look at some of the way they post things. You think, I didn't know they thought like that. Mm-hmm. But you just kind of let it go. But I guess if you saw it every day and someone was very active politically and posting things, maybe that's where the frustration comes from. And it's always available to see.
Yeah. And I think some people are more passive and more willing to go along. So you have somebody that's really angry and go, I don't really want to make them upset. So I'll just say, yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Also, the interesting thing, I think I don't really feel that our country has fundamentally changed. You look around and you wonder sometimes, of course, but I do feel that most people want the same thing that we've always wanted. You want a safe place to live. You want to have financial security. You want to educate yourself and your children, and you want the world to be a better place for your kids than it was for you. I think fundamentally we all still feel that way.
Yeah, I think that's the root of what we all want. It's just that everybody seems to have more different ways of thinking of how to get there, whether government should do that for you or you should have the responsibility of doing it yourself.
So when you look at this election and you feel that maybe this time everything's going to be different, and I'm going to tag into what Dave has been saying a lot and what we feel too, when you're investing, how do you look at everything? Because right now everyone is looking at events and saying, this is how I'm going to drive my investments. But every person I ever meet with at every client meeting says, my goal is this. You design your account and your portfolio to meet that goal. But then the next event comes up and they're like, wait, I'm going to throw my goal out the window. I no longer want to retire in 25 years because we're going to have an election.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You never have someone say, I want to invest for the long term until the next election, then I'm going to freak out, and then we're going to do it again, and then I'm going to freak out.
Mm-hmm. Never once. I've never sat down with someone that said, the next bad event, I'm getting out.
Right.
Everyone says, I'm ready for that. Or actually, I've had several conversations recently with people that want to get more aggressive. They're wanting to buy only technology until the election, and then they don't want to do that anymore. So risk is such a strange thing.
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting just what's hot. You can take somebody that's like, I'm conservative. The thing I want to do is buy CDs. And then they go, I was thinking about buying a rental. You know, real estate's doing well. I think about doing a rental or gold because it's up. You go, yeah, well, it's up. Yeah. You didn't think about this 2 years ago when it was down.
And it's always when it's up. Right. I actually had a call with someone exactly like that. They wanted to go from a more conservative portfolio. And they said, I think I want to buy Tesla. Mm-hmm. Like, well, what do you want to buy Tesla for? Well, California may go all electric.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's the whole reason for making an investing decision. When you told me before that, you know, I'm really concerned about the market. I like to be more on the moderate side. My goal is this. But then I saw Tesla went up a lot this year.
Yeah.
That's not goal driven either. We have to look at our overall accounts and say, where are we going with this? Right. What are we trying to accomplish? I want to send my kids to school. Well, would you gamble with that money? Or do you really know what you need at a certain point? So we're going to go into a lot of that, try to talk about events versus goals, and also talk about how much better off we really are than we were 4 years ago. Is this a true statement? So we're going to look at the data, because I don't want to make it a emotional feeling, because we always talk about that. We need to take the emotion out of our discussion. So let's look at some real true data here and dive into, are we better off? And then see if we can maybe find some comfort with investing that maybe we wouldn't have without being able to really sit and digest these numbers. But before that, let's go to the phones. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Jennifer and Tom, and welcome back.
Thank you. How are you?
Oh, fine, thanks. I'm still invested and virus-free, and as far as I know.
Good.
The evil thing about this virus, though, it pretty much forced me to get my own laptop and internet, you know.
No way. You really did?
Yeah, but I'm sure as heck, you know, I thank heaven that I came along before social media, before computers. I lived through, in fact, I got the polio virus. I lived through measles, mumps, chicken pox, and the son of a gun, I'm still kicking.
And you're
my immune
COVID.
System is all jacked up, you know. I'm able to fight off pretty much anything. So
that's good. Good.
And let's see, what was I going to say? I don't know. I'm still investing, and well, for one, okay. Now here's how to invest, right? Now, years ago, I was in South America, Colombia to be exact, and various other countries. Well, anyway, I invested in Avianca Airlines. Well, they damn near came to bankruptcy. Right now, I think they're 40 cents a share. However, they're still holding on by their toenails, so, you know.
At least for another day or two, right?
Yeah. Investing can be fun.
It is.
You know, you diversify, you buy some companies like Procter & Gamble or Apple, and other companies you just, you know, have mad money and say, what the hell?
Mm-hmm. We believe there's investing and there's trading, and gambling kind of fits in that trading bucket. So it is fun to buy stocks that you think may have some real growth potential that's outside of your investing, but you also have to realize that that's probably a lose it all, maybe make it big type of thing.
Yeah, that's
well, you know, my advisor, you know, I mean, I drive her mad because I do not believe in selling. And I have two accounts. I've got my account and then her account. And my account is about twice as big as her account. And so anyway, I'll buy something and hold. You want to know something interesting, you know. I do my calculations. And the last statement, now this last month was down, but my last statement was my appreciation was 65% and up, and hers was like 32%. Well, my favorite investment, and I'm a believer in railroads, my railroads are up like 317%. Well, if I took out my railroads, my appreciation was exactly what hers was. And this accounts for different stocks, different industries, everything. So I thought that was a rather interesting number.
That is interesting, for sure. You can always find those one sectors that definitely juice a portfolio.
Yep.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, unlike Dave, I don't like apple. The only good apple is something you get from an orchard and you eat. So, I'm being dragged into the technological revolution, screaming and fighting.
You know, it's interesting. I've been doing this for quite a few years. So when I first started working with Dave, the trading always had to be done over the phone. You'd have to call in and actually talk with someone. But the technology has made our lives so much easier. So we embrace it just because it takes away a lot of that time commitment that you had with phone calls versus just pushing buttons. So it definitely has made things easier and less expensive for everyone.
But the thing is, we're killing ourselves with ease. you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we'll tell Alexa to turn on the damn radio.
Yeah, we don't ever have to stand up, right? Turn off our lights. Turn on our lights. We don't ever have to get up.
Can't we realize this is not a good idea? The problem is we do not know when to stop, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And then we start to lose relationships because we don't meet people face-to-face. We Zoom all the time and talk on the phone or just text and don't have that connection, too. So I agree. There's definitely some drawbacks with it.
So anyway, and on another good note, I believe that there should be voting on one day. That was how it was designed. And if you're able, you get your buns off the couch and you tool down to the polling station, which I shall do Tuesday.
I will as well.
I will be there, too.
You know, I feel the same way. I have to tell you, my girls, they're 24 and 19, but when my 19-year-old got to vote for the first time, they actually said, is this your first time voting? And she said, yeah. And they all cheered and clapped for her. So it's really kind of a cool, makes you feel really good about your country to be able to get out and do that.
Well, we were taught to vote, and I've voted in every election since 68. But, I mean, it's amazing these days. Somebody will come up and say, well, I haven't voted for 3 decades, but I'm going to now or something, you know?
Wow. That's crazy. Can you imagine not
voting? Well, have a great day and a great show.
Thanks, Jim. We appreciate your call. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I just want to say, you know, every time we learn something new about Jim.
We do.
He's an accountant. He was in a marching band. He bought Xerox stock because of a story about a serial killer. He was in Colombia.
Yeah.
I think
he's an interesting guy. He needs to write a book.
Write a book all about Jim.
All about Jim. All right. I think we do need to take a break. And when we get back, we're going to dive more into, what we're looking at here, event-driven, goal-driven. Are we better off than we were 4 years ago? And just provide some data for you. And, you know, we really do have phone calls. We'd love to hear how you're feeling, if you voted yet, what you're doing for Halloween. Anything you'd like to talk with us about, just give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Petzo on this beautiful fall day. I'm staring out the window here at this great big apartment complex that's being built next to the station. And I think every time I pull in, it just blows my mind about how big it is. Boise is so being built up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was talking to a young man that's a new realtor, and he was saying that the average selling price for a home on the market right now, today in Boise is $700,000.
Wow.
That's not the average price of a home. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. That's the average price of a home on the market. I don't know, it's crazy. Who would have thought, right? I still remember my first little house that we bought. I think it was in 96 in Middleton. We lived out there, and it was $78,000.
We bought one in Meridian in 95 for 96.
See? Yeah. And now that house is probably $500,000. It's just strange, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess people have found us. We're absolutely a wonderful place to live, and we all know that. And maybe it's because of those family values that we talked about. They're still here. I mean, we have things that throw us a curve every once in a while that you just sit there and think, wow, I never thought that would happen here. But as you grow, that happens more and more.
Yep.
But when you really look at this area and you say, what do we have? We have security. We have good employment numbers. We have good law enforcement.
Right. The streets are clean.
Yes. I mean, we really have a great place to live. And I think that's been discovered.
Yeah. I just think that it has that feel of, hey, this would be a nice place to be from all the chaos and taxes and everything that some people are trying to escape from in government.
But then it's starting to change a bit, too. Mm-hmm. It's sure different than when I moved here back in early 90s.
Yeah, way back when you came here in a covered wagon, right?
I did. I really did. It was a long haul. We made it.
Yeah.
Built our little log house.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so back to what we were talking about. Are we trying to be, and again, I know Dave talked about this about a bit last week, I believe, about goal versus event driven, and how do we keep our mind focused on that end goal and not let us get kicked out? Because one of the things that always, always, always surprises me, and this happens every time, the best days in the stock market always follow the worst. So how do we know when those will happen? So we have a really rough week and we have a market's down over 5% and we have all this going on. Well, next week, even if on Monday, we don't know what could happen. Maybe the market will be up. So if you decide to get out on Friday because you know the market's going to go down on Monday, and as we always say, what we know isn't worth knowing. If that were to happen and you're out, you miss one of those great days. And the crazy thing, in 20 years, and I'm going to put this 20 years ending December of 2019, the end of December, the end of the year, if you missed the 10 best days of the market, your return goes from 6.5% to 2%. For missing 10 days, in 20 years. If you miss 20 days, your return goes even. You have no return at all. I don't know why that we can't get mm-hmm. that in our heads to understand. Buy and hold. Let your investments do what they want to do, and don't let the events kick you out.
One of the things that we had a Zoom call for our clients this week, and one of the things that we talked about, or Dave talked about in the Zoom call, and I think it is screaming the loudest I've ever been, and I've only done this for 15 years, but is that the words from John Templeton, this time it's different. The four most dangerous words in history in investing. And I think that that's what's screaming at us right now. And people are screaming in their minds and calling in and saying, this time it's different. This is not going to be, this is what's this election, this COVID, mm-hmm. this time it's different. And I just keep coming back to that. And then the other words that he said that aren't as famous is, it's always different, mm-hmm. right? There's always, the crisis of the day is going to be the loudest when you're in it. And it's going to be afterthought after it's over. And I know that this is a huge deal, this pandemic. Pandemics aren't just a little thing. They are a real thing. And this political chaos is real. Mm-hmm. It isn't, people are upset. People are, there's a lot of anger out there. But it's loud now. Mm-hmm. And this time it's different, but it's going to be something in the rear view mirror.
Always different, yep.
And then we're going to be on to the next thing.
Yep. And because Tom and I were sitting there going back through the last election since when I was first able to vote. So there's been four different presidents elected since I was first able to participate at 18. And you look at this and you say, okay, one of them that was a big one that we kind of forget about because it's over and done. We all remember the hanging chads mm-hmm. in Florida. It took, what, 36 days yep. to get the president?
And they went to the Supreme Court?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, there was some big political issues at that time. And I remember going through it thinking, hanging chad, what? Because mm-hmm. it didn't get punched all the way, so they threw out a bunch of ballots. It's crazy when you think about it. There's always something, but we forget about it when we're going through it. Mm-hmm. So this election with all the early voting, everything that's going on, I don't know. With technology, maybe it'll go really smooth.
Yep. And whatever it's going to happen, it's going to happen. But it's a thing where we've been in situations similar to this before, mm-hmm. and we'll be in them again. And I was just telling someone the other day, if you get out now and completely sell out, which that's what she wanted to do, and if you completely just get in cash and you're waiting, and then this, and the sun comes out, and somehow we're still alive in 5 days, 5 weeks, and we're sitting there, and you're going, okay, now when are you going to invest again? Well, I'm going to wait until this happens, or I'm going to wait until, I'm worried about this. Mm-hmm. And then in 2 years, you're still waiting because the next crisis, the next thing to worry about, North Korea, whatever, is going to be that next thing to worry about, to wait until after, and you'll always be waiting until after that.
Right. And it comes down to what we always say, you have to get it right twice, right? You sell out before the dip, and then you buy back in when it's still low. Well, one thing that we see by human nature over and over again, you don't ever do that correctly. There's no way you can. You don't know when the peak is, and you don't know when the bottom is, because the market is not that predictive. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it prices in large events, so we look at this, and we wonder. But to keep it going, you've got to stay invested. You've got to keep your path and stay on your goal. All right, you hear the music. We need to go out at the top of the hour. We will be back and talk a little bit more about the upcoming election and our feelings on it and how the market has performed in different administrations. But give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Pezzo as he enjoys this last long fall beautiful weekend. Tom Brown is joining me. And again, please give us a call. We'd love to talk with you. 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or an email, jstone@pezzofinancial.net. So we're talking a bit about what the world has looked like in the last 4 years versus the prior four. And really wanted to pull some information. And of course, data is interesting because they can take information and turn it to meet the objective. So what we did when we pulled this information is we truly wanted to take the last 3 years of Obama's administration and compare it to the first 3 years of the Trump administration. The reason why is that was after, you know, Obama had time to get out of the Great Recession, and he's not getting too much credit for a big recovery, and more of his policies were in place, and the same with the Trump administration. So what we look at and we say, the stock market in the first 3 years of the Trump administration was up 56%. The last 3 years of the Obama administration, the market was up 31%. Why that's super important to me is, as far down as we went through the Great Recession and how close we were to having a major, major, even worse than it was, issue with the economy, it's this coiled spring effect. If you have so much downward pressure, and this historically has happened time and time again with a recession, we just went through it with COVID, that the market went down so quickly that it snapped back up and it had that V-shaped recovery. You never know how each one of these are going to go, but that historically is what happens. You go down too far, that downward pressure finally snaps and the market jumps back up. Well, going through the Obama administration, again, this is not a political statement. This is facts. This is data. This is information that you can actually pull and see yourselves. To take it from First Trust, who's one of the companies we listen to a lot, it was a plow horse economy.
Mm-hmm.
It was very slow. Yes, it grew. Yes, it came out of it, but it was super slow to recover. We were at a pretty good point when Trump took over. They passed some tax cuts. They changed some oversight and higher regulations. They took those away, and the market really took off from that point. Through COVID, we're still way ahead of where we were at the end of the Obama administration.
Right. And so you ask yourself, because the market and the economy will do what it does pretty much without some things will do on its own. You know, it's just that business will take care of itself and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing that government can do is either slow it down.
Get in the way.
Or it can help it grow faster, right? So you ask yourself, what's going on here if you have an economy that should, in generally, if you just left alone, will come back, and you're coming from a deep recession that was the biggest since the Depression in the 1930s. So you would expect that the snapback should be a lot more. So you say, ask yourself, what could have caused that not to snap back better, mm-hmm. or come back better? Why does it take 8 years and we're still growing this thing, and why is that occurring? And you have to then look, well, what are those things? And he increased regulation, increased taxes, passed the health care law, which was a huge regulation.
Mm-hmm. A little high expense.
Deal. And so you have all these things that are putting a governor on the economy. So you go, well, there it is. That's what did it, right? He didn't confront China, right, during this thing. He didn't do all those things that Trump has done, which for Trump's purposes wasn't a good thing for the economy,
no.
But he did it on principle. And so you sit there and you go, okay, Obama had a pretty good cruise, right? He just kind of sat around and then he just did things on his agenda that, oh yeah, the economy's still growing. People are still getting employed, but they didn't get employed as much and it didn't grow as much because of all his regulations and so forth that he was putting on to slow it down.
And the interesting thing, we're going to jump around a little bit here, but the unemployment rate was something that we looked at as well, because everyone says, and I actually did a sort by the lowest unemployment for minorities. It's all out there on the Bureau of Labor Statistics, so you can go look at the numbers as well and try to do a sort to see how was unemployment through that time versus how it has been. And again, we look at this and we say, at the beginning of the Obama administration, black unemployment was at 12.7. The start of his second term, it was at 13.7. It did drop down to around 7%, but the lowest it had ever been was 5.5, and that was in August of 2019. So those numbers, they're there. I mean, it's amazing when you think about how good the economy was, how many people were working, the sense of happiness because people were out there doing okay again. And that happened up until February of this year when the pandemic hit. So it's interesting if we look at these numbers and we say, how was the economy really doing?
Right.
It was doing very well.
It was doing really well. And if you think about it, how how big a deal, how much even worse this pandemic economically would have been if we wouldn't have been in such a strong position. Think if this would have hit in March of 2009.
Yes.
When you have extreme unemployment already, you have banks teetering on failure. By being a strong economy, this allowed us to weather it. It's still tough, but it's still, we're in a lot better position.
And just going around Boise, and I'm not a big shopper, but I ventured out last weekend because I needed to pick up a few things, and it was crazy how busy everything is. And every store I went into had a Help Wanted sign up.
Yep.
Every one of them. Tom was talking to a good friend of his that owns a small business, and he's trying to hire a professional person, and his wage is competing with fast food restaurants.
Yeah, for just an administrative person, he's trying to pay somebody, and they go, well, I can get $15 an hour at Taco Bell.
Yeah. You know. So it's interesting, and that goes to the minimum wage thing, which I had a discussion with some young people because they were trying to understand why we wouldn't want minimum wage to go up. And I always say, you know, you want people to make a good living, and you want them to have a living wage, and you want them to not work for free, of course. But then you say, when the economy is strong and things are going well, the prices go up naturally because it's a competitive environment. When there's not as many people looking for jobs, you have to pay a little bit more to hire people that are willing to work.
Right. It just happens naturally, and that's why, and he, and that friend of mine talked to that point too, and he goes, you know, raising the minimum wage and forcing me, and he was pretty adamant about it. He goes, how can they say that doesn't affect me?
Right.
I have to pay the bills. So I'm saying, here's how much money I make. This is how much I'm paying out. If you're forcing me to pay more, then I make less.
Something gets
cut.
So
then that forces me, well, if I'm not as profitable and I have a bad situation and we have business go down, a pandemic kind of thing, well, I'm now forced to pay someone more than I would have been able to. So therefore, I got to get rid of somebody, or I'm not going to hire another person, or I'm going to have to overwork other people.
Yep.
It's just common sense. And I think that's one thing that we're finding in a lot of this policies that we're talking about, is common sense isn't common anymore.
It isn't. It's very logical too. If you think about it, if you have to pay more for anything, you have to take that money from somewhere.
Right. And people on the other side would say, yeah, but those people will have more money, therefore they can pay for more things and be more, you know, generate more for the economy.
But prices of everything go up too.
But if you can't afford to hire them, then they're not making that minimum wage.
Right. And the price of goods goes up, because that's another thing. If you're in a small business, you raise prices.
Right.
Something gives every time you increase one cost.
Yep.
It has to be taken from somewhere.
It's an ebb and flow. Yep. You push it up this way and it comes up on the other side, and that's just the way it's going to go.
So a statistic that I was actually very happy to hear is more than half of the Americans are invested in the stock market through retirement plans. That's a pretty nice number to think about.
Yeah, kind of goes again in the face of some people that say that increase in the stock market only affects the rich.
Right. Everybody that has a retirement plan through work is investing normally in the stock market in some form. I looked at the numbers. I still wish these were a little bit higher, because I do worry as a society when we get to retirement age that we don't have enough to live the way we want to live. And again, I put that very big out there, because it is, you do save to live the way you want to live. It's not to meet anyone else's objective. So someone says to you, how much money do I need to retire? Well, what's your lifestyle? So those are something you have to back into those numbers. Not everybody needs $5 million to retire. Some can retire very nicely on $500,000.
Yep.
So it's your lifestyle retirement goal that we try to help set. But that goes back to what we're saying. That works really well until an event throws you off your goal. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break now, because we have a lot of things we'd like to cover, and we want a few more minutes to do that. Also, we would like a call, 580-5436, 580-KIDO, because we always, in our office, we're all competitive. Normally over silly little things, but we do like to brag to Dave that we got more phone calls than he did. So please give us a call. Share some of your ideas of what you think is going on in this world right now. Or shoot me an email, jstone@petsofinancial.net. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Petso along with Tom Brown. Talking a little bit about the upcoming election and how anxious I think we all are to see the outcome. I have to say I am. I don't think I've had this kind of a feeling in a long time. So we talk big when we say things don't affect us, but believe me, we're talking a lot about what's going to happen if we do get a big administrative shift. Of course, we're more concerned if the Senate and the presidency goes blue than we are. Now, we're concerned anyway, but not from the standpoint of staying with our long-term goal. Again, if you need money and you're taking income, of course, you should always have some of that set aside. We've preached that no matter what type of an economy we're in, because like Tom just said, everything is going along well until you get kicked in the teeth, right?
Right.
And yep. Then something will always come along. That is life. We always have to plan for the what ifs because they will happen. So that doesn't change just because we're up to another election, which we will have another one in the next 4 years. And this will continue, hopefully, for the rest of our lives,
right.
Unless something strange happens. But this should continue forever. So why we look at this event and go, this time, as Tom was also saying in the great John Templeton quote, this time is different. Well, it will be different because we're going to have different players in 4 years as well.
Yep. And it is interesting to note, you know, that we've been here before. We've been through different presidencies and so forth. And again, you might think, well, they have policies that we've never considered before and so forth. Well, if you look in the past, there have been policies that have been brought up that have been suggested. One is a myth that the government, well, some people don't think it's a myth, but that the government is going to take over our retirement plans because the deficits are so high. And this started in 1991, I think, is when it was first. And it is actually a bill that is somewhere in government.
Yeah, and it's brought up
proposed,
periodically.
And every time there's some sort of downturn in the market, then someone brings it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so weird things are out there, weird ideas are out there. This seems a little bit more prevalent because people are in power that are promoting things that are like paying off student loans, free health care, and so forth. But we've been in similar situations and lived. I think we're going to live again.
And I want to touch back on something that Tom had said before we went on the break, and he's right. Everyone benefits that's investing in the market. It's super easy to actually go in and buy and do investing on your own so that you can change your future and you can plan for your own retirement. Used to be it was more difficult. It was hard to go and buy and sell stock, and you paid a lot for it. Commission-driven type of investing where you actually had to pay to buy or sell something, that's pretty much gone. They actually have these slice programs now with Schwab, and Fidelity, I think, is the other one that does it. And you can put $50 in and own a slice of Apple and any of these type of companies, and you can participate, and that's free. There's no commission to do that. So when you look at the world has opened up so everyone can participate in the greatest wealth building opportunity that there has ever existed.
But be careful, because as we've had in the last two weeks, we've had a lot of clients call, and they're, for some reason, everybody's trying to think that they're going to buy the next whatever, and they want to buy penny stocks. And just because something sounds, well, if they go green, then this is going to be a good company, and it's trading for 30 cents, you know, and I want to buy it because I want to buy 5,000 shares. And you got to be careful about that, because you can be a conservative person and
get caught up
in speculation and gambling, just as bad as someone that is sitting at the Las Vegas casinos. It just seems like, oh, this is going to be good. I have no idea what the company does. I don't even know if they make any money. But my friend said that these guys are really going to do well.
Yeah, that's gambling, and that's being very speculative versus trading. Right. And I'm hoping that people that listen will pay attention to that and realize that it's all about building wealth and not risking your money.
That long-term goal doesn't mean making short-term gambles.
Yes, and don't let people that, I don't know why we would ever take investing advice from people that are, and it used to be this way all the time, hairdressers and your neighbor and all these people that said, somebody told me once that this pot stock was going to go to the moon. Well, I don't know what edge you have if your neighbor is telling you that.
Yeah, it's always thing about the worst golfer is the one that gives the most advice.
Yes, absolutely. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
Good morning, Tom. Jennifer, how you doing?
We're good. How are you?
Oh, just trying to get my blood pressure down a little bit, you know, but it'll work.
We're not increasing it.
Well, I just wanted to change gear a little bit and go with this big city coffee deal.
Yes.
And I did have a question for y'all, since y'all smarter than I am. What participation trophy snowflake has ever been oppressed in Boise?
I have to think about that because I don't know of any of them.
You know, this Students for Oppressive Society or whatever the heck their little deal is, I have not seen anything. And I pretty much pay attention to the news and what's going on. And I have not seen oppression in Boise.
I have not either. And that one, honestly, I was very sad to see that because big city's right by our office. We go there frequently. My husband is in juvenile correction, so he knows a lot of law enforcement. And it's sad for me because, honestly, they sacrifice so much. And when you know the history of the owner of big city and why she's so supportive of the law enforcement society, it breaks your heart. It's like, I don't care if you feel oppressed or you feel like you have the right to stand up for something. These are the people you call when you are in the worst spot. And we're going to protest against them and people that support that. I don't know. That's part of the society that's really hard for me to understand. And I just can't get that at all, Terry.
Yeah, it goes right along with the big picture political stuff. So who are you going to call when you're in trouble? Somebody with a gun.
Yep.
And they want to take them all away and make sure you can't protect yourself. And anyway, I just wanted to get that off my chest so I can go back to listening to y'all and play my spider solitaire, do important things today.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Terry, what was encouraging, we were really pretty almost teared up about it, is out of our back door, we can see the sidewalk that runs past Big City Coffee, and there was a line to get in that was clear down the block, probably for
all
three,
day.
4 hours in the morning.
Yep.
It didn't die off until early afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And that just goes to show you what this community feels like, and that there are people out there that not everybody's lost their mind, you know, and probably that the people that are causing these issues are a very minority, and most of us still have good values.
Yeah. It was so busy there, Terry, that Tom wanted to order lunch and he couldn't get through, which we were so, I mean, that sounds funny, but we were like, yes, I'm so glad you can't get through because you realized how busy they truly were.
Yeah.
Well, I went by there yesterday about 1 o'clock thinking I'd spend whatever allowance I had left over that Erica let me have and, you know, just buy everything I could just to support them. I'll wait till the lines go down next week and, you know, keep supporting them. They do make it. Damn fine scones.
Oh, they do. And we actually were early enough before the crowd got really busy because we come in pretty early. We ran over and got the best bagel I've had in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to call up and stir the pot a little bit there while I could.
We appreciate it. And thank you for listening. And we always love your phone calls, Terry. Thank you.
All right, kids. Have fun.
All right. You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, but it was very, like you said, it was very emotional to watch, to see the people that came out in support of our men in blue.
Yeah, and I just, I really appreciate those people, and we should continue to support them, not just make it a one-day thing.
Absolutely.
They should be at the top of our list when you're going to go do something.
And it's very worthwhile. The food's excellent.
Right.
It's a great people there, so. Yep.
And it's all just Idaho, all Boise, so. Why not, right?
Yeah, and then when you're over there grabbing a sandwich, you can always come over and say hello to us because they're right out our back door.
Yep.
It's a great little area down there in the Linden District that's very, we always say it's up and coming, but it's been found as well. I mean, there's some cool little unique places down there.
Yep, everybody should come down.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so again, we're going to talk a little bit about wages too because they've definitely increased over the last few years. But we'll get to that because I believe we have to take a break here pretty soon at the bottom of the hour. So I don't want to jump into it too quickly because we want to spend some time really understanding those numbers. Because when we do start to talk numbers, it does get a little overwhelming. So if you have questions on what we're talking about, please give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or email me, jstone@petsofinancial.net. And we'll take your calls, hopefully, in the next hour. And Tom and I, or next half hour. I always say the next hour, but we only have a half an hour left. So please give us a call.
Yeah, you can call in an hour, but they're going to
We won't be here.
Flowers.
You'll be talking about gardening. All right. So again, give us a call. KIDO 580-KIDO. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Pezzo today. Thank you, Dave, for letting us take over. We do enjoy getting our little time here. Tom Brown is also here with me. We're talking about goals versus event-driven, as well as politics and pretty much everything.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of things
today.
We
have. I might even talk a little bit about taxes, but it's just such an exciting topic that sometimes we have to not do that one.
Yeah, I can't believe that we don't want to talk about that first every time.
Every time.
Taxes are... is the fundamental thing of why we live. Isn't that true? No.
For some people.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. Anyway, so call us, please. 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Or you can shoot me an email, jstone@petsofinancial.net. So a couple interesting things that we wanted to cover. This one I found was, we've listened to this, and you probably heard us mention it before, but First Trust is a firm that we listen to their economists often. They are the antidote to conventional wisdom is their catchline that they always say. They're very optimistic, and they always find ways to explain economic information in a very simple format. So if you'd like to listen to different people, look them up. First Trust, they're great. And they most of everything they have is available to the public as well. So you can hear what we hear. You can see the COVID data that Dave quotes frequently. We'd be happy to shoot you over the link. And also wanted to mention our Zoom calls. We finally found a way to do replays. So if you wanted to check out some of the calls that we have available for our clients, they are on our YouTube channel, which still blows my mind that we have a YouTube channel. But thank you, Erica, for getting that up and going. It's just search for Pezzo Financial, and you will see our most recent calls. We try to get them up within a few hours after the call is done. If you have any questions on that, also give us a call at the office or shoot us an email. So one of the charts that I looked at recently from First Trust, and Brian Westbury put this out, I think it was last week sometime, but he was talking about the growth of a $10,000 investment in the S&P since 1949. If you'd have put it in the S&P, walked away. Obviously, you can't invest directly in the S&P, but this is a hypothetical thing. But if you bought it into something that mirrors the S&P, we'll just say that. It would have gone from $10,000 to $2.2 million, approximately. If you would have said, I am only going to keep my money invested when there is someone in power of a specific party. So if only the Democratic Party was in power, that was the only time you were going to invest your money. From 1949 to now, the end of actually 2019, it would have only grown to 200,000 versus 2.2 million.
Wow.
That's mind-blowing to me. And then, on the other side, if it would only been when the Republicans were in party, it would have grown to 79,000. So now you're going to say, oh, wait, no, wait, wait, I don't ever want to invest with the Republicans in party. Obviously, they're bad for the economy. That's not what this is saying at all. We don't know what kind of conditions were in play. We're not saying that you invest based on political parties and which one is better for the economy, because it's really easy to say, oh, well, this one continued because of this administration or these policies, or the House was this way, the Senate was this way. There's a lot of things to go into play. This is just the presidential party in power, okay? What this tells you, though, leave the money invested. Don't let politics destroy your long-term plan.
Right. Every year, every election, we always get the same thing, and we always get this data, but it still comes back to that saying, well, what do you think about the election next year? What do you think we should do? Mm-hmm. And you bring out this data, and it just seems like it's like, again, this time it's different, though. These people are not the same people back then. Just like, you know, Dukakis was, or he was a different kind of person than, you know, Biden. And just like, no, all these people that are running in all these elections, they all have these same things. I mean, the Democrats are always more leaning toward the left. Republicans more toward the right. It's always going to be the same. All elections are going to be the same kind of dynamics. And again, like you're showing, that we've lived through those things and profited.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the best thing for the market is to have divided government.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of reasons. First, nothing is pushed through easily. The reason we have equal branches is so that they fight. I know everybody says, oh, you don't want that. You want people to reach across the aisle and make nice and play good together and do everything else. No, you don't. You don't want anything to go that easily. You want some people that have differences of opinion so you can sit down, hopefully have somewhat of a civil, nice debate, but you don't want things to get pushed through.
Right. I mean, look at Reagan and Tip O'Neill. Mm-hmm. Battled and argued and all the time, but they came together. They were able to you know, negotiate finally to some means. I think that's the big thing about Trump is he's out there negotiating, mm-hmm. and everybody else is not, because they don't know how to negotiate. They just, my way or the highway, and so we're not going to do anything. And he's just going, hey, I'm going to play my hand. You're supposed to try to play your hand. And then we come up with something that both of us can sort of live with. And I think that's part of it is he's just a business guy that negotiates things, and he's finding people here that
these people are weird.
They don't negotiate. They don't know how to do things like this.
Nope.
So he's having a hard time.
And you don't ever go against the political powers of your party. You don't do that, because then you're set aside as well. I was blown away by Feinstein, who after the confirmation hearing said, hey, great job, and now everybody's mad at her because she gave them hey, you did a good job on a confirmation hearing, and that causes this big issue within the party.
Think about when Reagan was shot, Tip O'Neill went to the hospital and prayed with him, for him. Could you imagine if that happened and something happened, that say Trump was really sick, got really sick from COVID, and do you think Pelosi was going to come to the hospital? No.
Yeah. So let's get back to a couple other things. Wages. Let's talk about wages. Have they actually increased percentage-wise more in the first 3 years of the Trump administration versus the last 3 years of the Obama administration? So again, all these statistics we've pulled from the Bureau of Labor Management. So this is not just Google search. Because Google search, you'll find everything, believe me. When we were looking at this.
Or maybe you won't find everything.
Yeah. You'll find, if you look hard enough, you will find what you're looking for, I guess is the best way. And I didn't go into this looking for anything other than statistics and data to prove the point. So when you run from the last 3 years of the Obama administration, the average income increased, the wages, 7.5%. And this is private employers. This is not government employers. Through the Trump administration, again, the first 3 years, because that's all we can measure, it was up 9.5%. So again, we keep going back to the economy that was in place when Obama was in power. It should be recovering very fast because there was such a huge tailwind he should have had. And to have the wages go up less was surprising to me.
Yeah, and if you dig even deeper, you find that the lowest income people had the highest wage increases. The lowest 10% jumped 7%, and the growth rate for those without a high school diploma was up 9%. And
wow.
And that's amazing.
It really
in that
is.
Period of time.
It really
and
is.
It's really amazing.
Yep.
And those are the people that supposedly are not participating.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's what you go back to when I looked at some of the 401k balances. The percent that the younger people are now putting away was surprising to me. They say 20 to 29-year-olds are putting away about 8% of their income.
Right.
That's great, because even though the balances for 60 to 69-year-old don't show that, that's because this is a different generation coming up. They didn't save quite as much. Some people were more dependent, I believe, on Social Security and pensions and didn't save as much for themselves. But if you can get people in their 20s to put away 7 to 10% of their income, we go back to that coffee illustration, right? Cup of coffee a day, $5, $150 a month can grow to over $1 million in 40 years?
Yeah.
I mean, anybody can do this. This is
right.
Not at all just for the wealthy. This is for anybody that wants to be slightly disciplined, not go get that cup of coffee a day, put away some money, and you'll sit back and go, wow, my goal was to have $1 million by the time I was 60.
Right. I've questioned a lot of clients that we've had that have built up over $1 million in their retirement plans over their time. And I said, so what was different? What caused you to be able to do this? Because they didn't come from and inherited. I mean, this is money that they had to save. It isn't like someone said, hey, we're going to put money in your 401k for you, your uncle or something. And he said, you know, I would just raise that way to save. And then this came along and it said, here's how you do it. And the company said that they put a little bit more in there for me. It just seemed like a no-brainer to do it.
And a lot of people are shocked by the balances. That's what I get a lot, too. It's like, I don't know how it got here this quickly.
Right.
It seems like I just started working and I started at a job that said, hey, we've got this thing called a 401k. I don't know what that is. So I put a couple percent in. They matched it. I get 100% return on my money. And then I increased it whenever I could.
Right.
Lived within my means. And that's the biggest thing, too. Live within your means. It changes your life. And then they get to retirement and they said, I've got a couple of $1 million. I don't even know how it happened.
Right. And it isn't like it's rocket science. It's all there for you. You don't have to you don't have to overthink it. I had a client this yesterday call, and she had some money. She got some money out of the blue, that a big chunk, and she said, "We just got this investment. I'm thinking about maybe I should buy a rental or something to diverse because I should have other assets." I go, "You don't need to. You don't have to. Just because you can doesn't mean you should, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you should have to go out there and buy a whole bunch of stuff because someone told you that you should be doing something different. You can keep it as simple as a 401k and become extremely wealthy for you. You know, not, wealth is a
relative,
personal thing.
Yep.
And you can do it. And it doesn't have to be a thing where you have to go and do these big extravagant kind of things and become like a baron, land baron or something, and be successful. You can keep it simple. And for the most part, that's where people are the most successful, is when they just keep it simple.
Yeah. And there's all types of investments. People want to own real estate. You can buy it through a fund that you don't have to go plunge the toilet or sweep the walk or hire the people to blow out your sprinklers and to do all these things that need to be done to keep a rental going. Because most of the time, people that are renting that house, they're just going to show up and live. They're not going to pay attention to a lot of the things that need fixed. The cost to keep a rental going, the cost, and Tom knows this because he does taxes for a lot of people that do own rentals. They don't understand the whole capital gains, the taxation on that, recapturing of depreciation. All these things that come up that people don't add into that return on investment. Right. And if you
or
put
take
it,
away from the return on the
correct.
Investment.
Yep. So they look at that and they say, this is just an easy way. And I understand. Sometimes that feeling of the market being this intangible, inanimate object that's out there and it's on a piece of paper that says I have so much. Hey, but I can drive by my rental.
Mm-hmm. I can go touch it.
I can touch it. It's there. It's real. It makes sense to me. I understand it. It's very simple to understand a rental. The market gets gray for people and they get mm-hmm. concerned about it. But the market is really the easiest way to do this.
Right. And like Dave says, you don't have the value of your rental and the value and your return on your rental reported to you daily.
Nope.
Right. It isn't something you monitor daily. It's this thing you have out there, and you have this just belief that I'm making lots of money. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking at the numbers, but I'm making lots of money. And it's the best thing I ever did because I bought it at $100,000. It's now worth $300,000. I've had to put in $100,000 to keep it going, but that's in the past. But here's what it is, and then you don't pay attention. That's why I told her, the rate of return for residential real estate rentals, if you factor in the life cycle costs, mm-hmm. is about 4%. Mm-hmm. 4%. And that's after paying taxes, after the whole thing. And you're just like, okay, are you going to do that? Plus, real estate is the only investment, or one of the only investments that require you to put more money in to keep it going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't have a mutual fund that says, oh, by the way, you need to put another $5,000 in, or this is not going to work anymore.
Right, right. All right, I do think we have one more break before the top of the hour. So we're going to go ahead and take that now. When we get back, please give us a call, 580-KIDO, 580-5436. Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Petzo along with Tom Brown. Give us a call, 580-KIDO. We do have enough time that we could take a few calls. So if you'd like to, please do so. You can always shoot me an email. And even if I don't have time to address it on air, we will get back to you this weekend as soon as we can. You know, it's interesting. We were just talking here on the break because one of the things in Boise that's crazy right now is the housing market. And we were talking about that whole fear of missing out, which comes with almost every aspect. It's with investments. If you miss this one and you'd miss this one. And if only I would have bought when I knew that Tesla was going to go to the moon and I knew that was going to happen and I knew that this was going to happen or whatever it might be. You always have that feeling of what if I only did this. And it's interesting because Tom and I were talking about that because the average price of a home in Boise on the market is $700,000 right now. A couple years ago, it was like $350,000. So people say, well, if I'd only would have bought a house back then. But buying a home is also a burden.
Right.
You're responsible for everything that comes with that house. Increasing of homeowners' dues, increasing of taxes. And if you're just on the edge and you barely are making that payment and all of a sudden your payment goes up because your escrow account needs more funds in it to make those payments, or your roof, or you need someone to come blow out your sprinklers, or your sprinkler line breaks.
HOA.
Everything in the world that comes from this.
And it's funny also along that, uh-huh. is your furniture.
Oh, yeah.
because you can't have crappy furniture in a $700,000 house, so you're going to have to spend $25,000 on furniture.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then your neighbor has a nicer car, and you want to fit in, so then you go buy a nicer car.
You're not going to buy a 2006 Subaru.
Yep, and then I had we were chatting with a realtor, and he was explaining that he had a young buyer coming in from California that's credit score was 580, and he was able to find a lender that would lend to him. I don't know if it'll go through. I mean, it's definitely not a done deal, but I thought at 580, how do you even qualify for, and how do you get a 580 credit score? So we dug into it a little bit deeper, and he is just so leveraged. He has a lot of toys. He has a brand new cars. He has side-by-sides, boats, all these things that he's making payments on. Now he wants to buy a house. If someone were to come to us in that situation, we would say, get your financial life in order first, because something will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then what are you going to do? You don't want to lose your house.
Yep. It's one of those things that you're just, fate will come and knock on your door no matter what. But it seems to be more prevalent when you put yourself in a position where you're more at risk. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to have a major car breakdown. You're going to have a medical bill. You're going to have whatever. And it just seems when you have money in the bank and you have all these things covered, those kind of emergency just don't affect you, or they don't come up as much. But now it's just like I'm leveraged to the hilt, and this just like one little thing and we're done.
Mm-hmm. And you don't want to live that way. It's too much stress.
But going back to what you were saying before, it is really easy, even for people that are, you know, live within their means, that kind of thing. It's really easy when you have low interest rates, you have equity in your home, to go, oh, wow.
I want to extend. I could do this.
Yeah. We saw those friends, and they have their neighborhood. Oh, it's so awesome. They have a pool, and we don't, and all that kind of thing. And it's easy to start going with that. Same thing that happened when you first got out of school or whatever, got on your own. You go, I can make a $25 payment and buy that TV,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm. And for the next
soon
10 years, I'll buy that TV.
And pretty soon you have a $2,100 mortgage, and you're going, yeah. How did we get here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then, like I said, then we're financing the furniture that we have to have, and you're financing the cars, and you're financing everything, because now you've gone to the dark side, and now you're just borrowing everything.
Now you're living a payment lifestyle, and that's a hard thing to get out of, because you start to think of, oh, you know what? I can make a payment. If you can make a payment, you're okay, and that's mm-hmm. not the way it should be.
No.
So even though I did not want to talk much about taxes, I do want to talk about taxes. Because if there is a repeal of the Trump tax cuts, it will affect everyone. It, mm-hmm. Mostly, though, the lower earners. Because the thing that you have to remember is with the higher earning people that had higher income to deduct. State income tax, also property tax, all those things that were in states that are heavily taxed, they got a deduction from their federal income tax. That went away pretty much, up to $10,000 on home,
mm-hmm.
and
property taxes and you know the mm-hmm. your personal income taxes and so forth mm-hmm. all went away.
Yep.
State income tax added to your property taxes. So if you owned a home in New York, you probably had $50,000-$60,000 or more, right?
Of taxes.
Haven't lived New York for never, and so that went down to $10,000. So the tax rate is only a small part of that whole thing. So mm-hmm. if you're sitting there going, we're going to repeal the tax bill, Trump's tax cut bill or all that, then you're actually saying, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to give the higher income people a tax break.
Yep.
I'm not going to say that. I'm just saying I'm repealing the tax bill. Mm-hmm. And that makes it sound really like, and then I'm going to increase the taxes on a higher income. So you increase 2%, but you're giving them a 5% tax break.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing. When you look at tax brackets, you don't understand all that goes into it. That's much more than just a reduction of the taxes and an increase of the brackets. There's also standard deduction versus itemizing, all those things that go into it and how that's treated. Because when you really think about, like Tom's example, again, I've never lived in New York either, have no idea how high the tax rates are, but we've heard they're high. But if you were in that example able to deduct $50,000 and now you're only able to deduct $10,000, that's a big tax break for people that have high earners.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not ever factored into this when they just say we're going to repeal it because he only helped the high earners. Well, he gave them a 2% discount on their bracket, but that doesn't mean
there weren't other things. But he increased their taxes substantially for those people. And you wonder why the people, these financial people, they scratch their head and go, why are they backing this tax or this candidate that is wanting increased taxes? I wonder why they're thinking about that. I'm sure it's all for the common good, that they really want to help out the little guy. That's what they always think about. But again, you just don't understand. Even in our state, where we aim taxes like that, but still pretty high.
They're pretty high.
I've seen where people have been very limited to their what they could have deducted because of the $10,000 limit. And especially higher income players. People that have a lot of state income tax that was withheld.
Yeah, that was quite a change. So when you look at this, you really dig into, I mean, as much as you can, because I know it's such an exciting topic. Tom and I have a lot of banter back and forth when he says, let's talk taxes. And I go, yeah, let's do that. But it is true. You do need to understand how the tax code works. Just the basics to understand where the breaks really are, so that when you go in and you say, what am I voting for? What's the most important thing to me as a human? What is my goal? Is it family security, financial security, that safe place to live, leaving my life better for my kids? Is that what your goals are? Well, who is the best person for that? I can't make that decision for you, of course. I know that I'm going to vote on Tuesday, and I'm really looking forward to having this end, because it does feel like this is an end point and that maybe we'll get some sort of normalcy back, or we won't.
Or at least we can move on.
But we can move past this one and go on to the next event. But don't forget what your long-term goals are. Stick with those. It will work. The market does work. The only thing that can cause it not is to let these events get you off your goal. So stop and think about that. Call your financial advisor if you're working with them. Say, I'm nervous. I want to talk about this. Give us a call. We're happy to talk with anyone. That's what we enjoy. But again, thank you for listening. We'll be here hopefully again soon. But thank you for listening.